I have the high privilege and the distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
We stand at this crossroads of history. The eyes of all people in all nations are once again upon us, watching to see what we do with this moment.
Mr. President, the whole world knows 9/11 was a lie. Your credibility is going to be destroyed if you keep saying that America was attacked by Muslims on 9/11.
I remind everybody, nearly 3,000 of our people were killed on September 11, 2001 for doing nothing more than going about their daily lives. Al-Qaeda and its allies have since killed thousands of people in many countries.
Obama lügt.
Obama tells lies, just like Bush. I see no fundamental difference, though his tone is different. There's no difference in the facts on the ground, though.
To relieve the strain on our forces, my budget increases the number of our soldiers and Marines. To each and every one of them, we honor your service. We are inspired by your sacrifice, and you have our unyielding support. To meet the challenges of the 21st century, from terrorism to nuclear proliferation, from pandemic disease to cyber threats to crushing poverty, we will strengthen old alliances, forge new ones, and use all elements of our national power. We will forge a new and comprehensive strategy for Afghanistan and Pakistan to defeat Al-Qaeda and combat extremism, because I will not allow terrorists to plot against the American people from safe havens halfway around the world. We will not allow it.
Die sind wirklich verrückt auf die Idee.
They're really crazy about the idea of dominating the whole world. The Pentagon's term for it is full spectrum dominance. We control everything.
Kontrollieren alles.
Land,
Sehen,
sea,
Luft,
air, cyberspace, outer space, everything.
We want to make a Pax Americana. So that means an all-inclusive global empire. That was part of central motivation for 9/11. Because it was the basis for all these other crimes. It was the basis for saying, now we need to torture. Now we can attack another country preemptively. You know, we developed a new doctrine of preemptive warfare on the basis of 9/11.
Böse Terroristen greifen die freie Welt an.
Evil terrorists attack the free world and it has to defend itself. And we condemn the horrific crime led by Osama bin Laden on the 11th of September 2001.
Das müssen sozusagen auf amerikanischen Druck hin weltweit alle Regierungen so.
That's what the Americans are pressuring all the world's governments to say. And when you know that such rhetoric is dictated, we're allowed, of course, to doubt that it's right.
Daran zweifeln, ob sie stimmt.
Two billion people watched 9/11, all together having the same feelings, the same fear. Everybody who did that was aware that the power of images was enormous. To dominate the images, you have to know the grammar of the images. You have to know the syntaxes of the images, and the most part of the population has no any idea about that.
Beim 11. September sind 3000 Menschen ums Leben gekommen.
On the 11th of September, 3000 people were killed. A crime like that has to be dealt with by the police, by the justice system and so on, and lead to court convictions. You can't just say like President Bush did, we know that those who perpetrated September the 11th come from Afghanistan. We have the proof, but we can't make it public to protect the sources. You can't do it like that. That's illegal. That's against international law.
If one member of the political elite afford the risk to be engaged in this kind of discussion, his political career can be finished very easily. Well, suddenly one journalist arrives and asks you with the microphone in the hands, what do you think about? And this is very dangerous because you have to answer, I don't know, or I don't agree, or I agree. All the three answers are very difficult to defend. The large majority of the members of the parliament don't know nothing about this question. Their level of information is very similar to the level of information of normal citizens in the street. Maybe even worse, because people in the street sometimes read something, and the ignorance of many members of the European Parliament is evident. That means they have accepted the official version without any reflection. And when I say that, I say the same thing for the right and for the left. There is no difference.
On the question of 9/11, we have a very strong psychological, political opposition. From the very beginning, the 9/11 became the day after a taboo for all the printed and televised media. This is everything.
The 9/11 did not begin the 9/11 in the morning. 9/11 began when the neocon wrote the first part of the new American century, where it is very clear that they already thought that it was necessary a revolutionary change. That means this revolutionary change has not been imagined by the Muslim terrorist. This change has been imagined by a certain group of neocon sitting in the United States. This is the very beginning.
Also ich war 25 Jahre im Bundestag. Ich war in dieser Eigenschaft in den Geheimdienstausschüssen.
I was a member of the German Parliament for 25 years. I was on the secret service committees that had to approve their annual budgets. So I got some idea, but not very deep. Then after the Soviet Union and East Germany collapsed, we had to investigate a corruption case. Interestingly, we found a relatively dense relationship between the secret services across the blocks.
Dichte Beziehung der Geheimdienste über die Blocks.
And I tried to shed light on that. It got me into deep difficulties because the government wouldn't allow access to files or only very late. A lot was destroyed. So I struck out on my own and looked at the scene in America more closely, just exactly what the CIA does, what its tasks are. And so you gradually become a criminal investigator who asks, does the claim made correspond at all with the crime scene? And then you start to get your doubts. And when you approach the thing in this crime investigative and secret service way, you very quickly find an altogether different prevailing pattern than the one being presented to the public. The media no longer report properly. They can't be relied on. It also used to be like that before. But now, with this core occurrence, it's the decisive factor. The way the media are behaving is unconstitutional.
Wir haben ein Mediensystem, in dem jeder einzelne Mitarbeiter in seinem
have a media system in which in the past 20 to 30 years every single worker has had their time and financial budgets cut more and more. The inhuman stress journalists now have to work under is part of a media leadership system that ensures that independent research, clean reflection about occurrences, precise depiction of historic backgrounds are neither wanted nor supported.
Genaue Darstellungen geschichtlicher Hintergründe weder gewollt noch gefördert sind.
That's the situation, and it has nothing to do with us amusing ourselves to death. That's not what this is about. No, we are quite deliberately impacted so strongly by badly informed media that it's hard for us to ignore them.
So stark beaufschlagt, dass wir ein Problem haben, uns dem zu entziehen.
In summer 2007, the terrorist threat was talked up in a similar way in a conversation between German Interior Minister Schäuble and selected media representatives, in which Schäuble said, "We're threatened by attacks like never before. The danger was never so great as it has been since the 11th of September," and so on. And these media people from Spiegel, the Springer Press, Berlin's Tagesspiegel, took this on board and turned it into articles just as they'd heard it and asked no more critical questions. In autumn 2006, the Americans allegedly caught emails between Pakistan, Afghanistan at one end and Germany at the other end, already alluding to these big terror attacks by the fabled Jihad Union. Based on this American information, a huge action was started in Germany, in which 500 police personnel hunted three teenagers for practically half a year. The three boys were absolute dilettantes. They ignored all rules of conspiracy. They were said to be planning to build bombs in a holiday resort in the Sauerland rural region. It's a place that usually attracts pensioners and other fit hikers. And that's a place where very Arab-looking, very Mediterranean-looking, very suspect-looking people are going to take lodgings. They'd have to be as conspicuous as the Beagle Boys at a children's birthday. How you do that right is known from the former German RAF urban terrorists. You rent an anonymous flat in an anonymous high-rise close to a highway access, and not in a vacation facility among suspicious German pensioners.
It's always at disposal. There are so many. You don't need to look for them. You will find in the street every day. You can choose them. You can use them. You can kill them if it is necessary. And they will do everything, believing that they are doing what they want.
We haven't had an internationally planned terror attack in Germany. But with you and the 82 million new terrorists, we have to be really alert to keep it that way.
Damit das auch so bleibt. Deswegen überwachend speichern.
From now on, we keep watch on and record all your activities for 6 months. For example, who you phone and when, who you email and why. And because you're a terrorist, the Federal Criminal Office from now on can also access your computer. We know your passwords, monitor who you chat with or rummage around in your personal documents.
Oder stöbern in deinen persönlichen Dokumenten.
We're able to download all data from your computer, change them and store them completely new.
Verändern oder ganz neue.
A new ID card that, amongst other things, contains your fingerprint. More monitoring cameras and many more other surprises are in store for you.
Überwachungskameras und noch viele
because you're a terrorist.
Überraschungen warten schon auf dich. Denn du bist Terrorist.
Die westeuropäischen Gesellschaften sollen.
The plan is to spread panic in West European societies so that the West European democracies put on security state and police state armor. After all these terror attacks and attempted attacks, the rights our constitution guarantees us have been radically cut.
Wir haben etwa nach 9/11 im Jahr 2001 die sogenannten Schiili-Gesetze.
Since 9/11, there have been laws about phone tapping, about bans on Islamic associations.
Verbot islamischer Vereine geht. Wir haben nach dem Anschlag in Madrid 2004.
After the 2004 Madrid attack came the move to store all our communication data for a long time beyond our control. The authorities know everything about us.
Und wir haben dann nach den Sauerländer Festnahmen.
And after the arrests of the three teenagers in September 2007, we got the new law about online searches and large-scale info gathering. It means police can now film into homes and not just listen in as they used to be able to do. All these are attacks on the law-based state by the one who's supposed to defend it, the Interior Minister. I lived for 40 years in a Big Brother state, and I think we need to point to problems. And if people are watched on this scale because they're being critical or naming and shaming, then we haven't moved on by a single step. Many people have ideas about what could be changed, what could be done better. They can talk to members of parliament, they can write, but it's all ignored. The political elites and the security specialists in Washington, just like in Berlin, are well aware that Western societies are heading for huge convulsions, and they're now looking for ways to handle an uncontrollable and impoverished population that might go for the scalps of the rich and super-rich. And for that, these faked, invented terror threats are quite good.
If you are taking decisions against the majority of the people, you have to lie and you have to act undercover. And you have to, not to convince, but to frame, to create fear. And this is a function of the Secret Services.
I started out as a spy back in the 1990s. I worked for the British spy agency MI5, and then ended up leaving, resigning, and blowing the whistle on their crimes and incompetence. And when I say crimes and incompetence, we are talking big time crimes.
The primary reason why I left and blew the whistle was because of a false flag terrorist operation, which occurred in 1996 when MI6 funded a plot to try and assassinate Colonel Gaddafi of Libya. Now, obviously that went wrong because Gaddafi is still very alive, but it did kill innocent people, both with the explosion under the car and the ensuing security shootout. One of the few things that is real about James Bond is that they do have a license to kill, if they get prior written permission from their political masters. Now, in this case, they didn't get permission from the Foreign Secretary. So it was illegal as well as a highly unethical and immoral attack. If you want to run any sort of terrorist or false flag attack, it's very much need to know because it's usually highly illegal. So there might be one or two people who have the overall picture, and then other people will have compartmentalized views of what is happening. And there's very much a need to know. I mean, other projects have been kept very well hidden for years in the Manhattan Project to develop nuclear weapons. I think 130,000 people were involved in that, and nobody breathed a word for years. Same with the Iran-Contra scandal in the 80s, you know, about 5,000 people involved, and it took years for that to be uncovered. When it came to look at things like 7/7, you've got to bear in mind that there is this sort of standard weapon that intelligence agencies use, which is false flag terrorism.
The attacks happened in the morning of the 7th of July 2005, and at exactly the same time that these real attacks, which killed 56 people, were happening, in the same train stations, anti-terror drills were taking place, run by a company that works with the British Intelligence Service.
There was a man called Peter Power, who runs a company called Visor Consultants, which specializes in running terrorism drills. And he was running an exercise that morning. And after the bombings had occurred, or the explosions had occurred, he went on the national media to talk about it. And he said live that he was running this operation, and halfway through the operation, the attacks occurred. And they occurred in precisely the same stations at precisely the same times as the ones in his drill.
Today we were running an exercise for a company, bearing in mind I'm now in the private sector, and we sat everybody down in the city, 1,000 people involved in the whole organisation, but the crisis team, and the most peculiar thing was we based our scenario on the simultaneous attacks on the underground and mainline station. So we had to suddenly switch an exercise from fictional to real.
And he said in those interviews that the hair stood up on the back of his neck because of the coincidence. Now, I don't know, it certainly would be intriguing to find who he was running those drills for, who was paying him, who had organised it. But also, it's part of a pattern for other incidents, like the Madrid bombings, like 9/11 itself. Before these big, high-profile terrorist atrocities, there seems to be some sort of security drill going on, which can confuse the initial response to a live attack.
European and American secret services have played a principal role in all attacks or attempted attacks on European soil since the mid-90s. In all these plots, undercover agents, informers and staff of MI6, MI5, BND, CIA, DIA and so on were involved. But perhaps one should not speak of the secret services, but of the American factions within the European secret services. In close collaboration with their American case officers, they pursue the aim of creating a mood in the old Europe, as Rumsfeld called it, which is critical of American war waging, that will make us also put all our resources into the worldwide American anti-terror struggle.
Dem amerikanischen Antiterrorkampf weltweit anschließen müssen.
Anti-Islamic hysteria and similar things are promoted to stoke the readiness to go to war.
And now I'd like to speak clearly and candidly to the American people. The situation is increasingly perilous. It's been more than 7 years since the Taliban was removed from power, yet war rages on. Insurgents control parts of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Attacks against our troops, our NATO allies, and the Afghan government have risen steadily. And most painfully, 2008 was the deadliest year of the war for American forces. In Iraq, we had success in reaching out to former adversaries to isolate and target al-Qaeda in Iraq. We must pursue a similar process in Afghanistan while understanding that it is a very different country. There is an uncompromising core of the Taliban. They must be met with force, and they must be defeated. I've already ordered the deployment of 17,000 troops that had been requested by General McKiernan for many months. These soldiers and Marines will take the fight to the Taliban in the south and the east.
And the first of those 15,000 to go will be 8,000 Marines, America's toughest fighters. These people show no sign of being interculturally competent in any way. They're about kicking indoors and killing people.
This push will also help provide security in advance of the important presidential elections in Afghanistan in August.
Although they know that this is the 1 month of the year that the Taliban can deploy 40 to 50,000 more fighters, because the religious schools in Pakistan, the madrasas, are in summer recess, that's precisely the month the USA wants to hold elections.
At the same time, we will shift the emphasis of our mission to training and increasing the size of Afghan security forces so that they can eventually take the lead in securing their country.
Was sind das denn für Leute?
What kind of people are these? Can they speak Pashto, the language of the Pashtuns? Can they speak the second big language of the country, Dari, the Afghan dialect of Persian? Are they culturally knowledgeable in any way? Not in the least. So what does one do? They just let the police do drills, and then they're sent as cannon fodder into battles with the Taliban, where they die in large numbers.
That's how we will prepare Afghans to take responsibility for their security and how we will ultimately be able to bring our own troops home.
This is all part of the American strategy. And the more that Afghans shoot at Afghans, the happier NATO is.
All of NATO understands that Al-Qaeda is a threat to all of us, and that this collective security effort must achieve its goals.
Our behavior makes these peoples in Afghanistan and Pakistan hate us more and more, to the point where in Pakistan, only 1 to 2% of the population are really behind America, and the rest of them oppose it and want no more to do with it. That's what we do. And then we need more troops. And then we need more Secret Service activities. And then we use development aid to hide the Secret Service activities. And so on and so forth. And then we sell people the line that the civilian-military cooperation in Afghanistan helps to build the country up. Fortunately, the German Science and Politics Foundation has published an essay that states that civilian-military cooperation serves only military aims. This is not about building up Afghanistan. This is not about service to the Afghan people. This is not about sustainably backing Afghanistan's development or some such thing that our politicians tell us here.
We are not in Afghanistan to control that country or to dictate its future. We are in Afghanistan to confront a common enemy that threatens the United States, our friends, and our allies, and the people of Afghanistan and Pakistan who have suffered the most at the hands of violent extremists.
What we need is for the USA to not only declare that they don't want to be in control of Afghanistan, but for them to declare generally that they're not out to play a dominant role in the region anymore, and that its peoples finally get what the Americans constantly claim is their aim, sovereignty and freedom. Here in Central Asia and in Pakistan, we have a policy that amounted to establishing a permanent, bloody, eternal dispute through the British border fixing between the new state India and the new young state Pakistan about the Kashmir Valley, 90% of whose inhabitants are Muslims, but which was allocated to India. This small decision involving a few million people has since led to three big wars between the countries and constantly threatens to cause another, because the British drew borders like that worldwide, so that historians even call it British border drawing.
Eine solche Art von Grenzziehung, so dass der Historiker sogar von britischen Grenzziehungen spricht.
Their aim was to have as many peoples as possible engaging in bloody conflicts with each other, so that their strength isn't directed outside, but is wasted inside. There's a border between Afghanistan and Pakistan called the Durand Line. It runs right through the middle of Pashtun settlement lands on both sides of it. There are Pashtuns in Afghanistan and Pashtuns in Pakistan. The border was agreed for 99 years in 1893 between the British Empire, the Tsar, and a few Afghan dignitaries. So this border has been legally disputed in international legal terms since 1993, if not even irrelevant.
Na, zumindest umstritten, wenn nicht gar irrelevant.
Es führt dazu, dass Pakistan der Ansicht ist, man müsse sich unter den
That causes Pakistan to try to secure friendship and influence among Pashtun populations so as to gain a strategic area depth that could buffer any Indian attack. All of Pakistan has thought in these categories for 60 years. To repel an Indian attack, one needs to create hinterland for oneself in Afghanistan. So Pakistan permanently destabilizes Afghanistan. Pakistan doesn't do that for fun. And it's also very expensive. It's acting in self-defense, so to speak. And so it's as clear as day that there's no solution for the entire region unless the Kashmir dispute is sustainably resolved.
Ohne dass wir das Kashmir-Problem einer nachhaltigen Lösung zuführen. Es ist eindeutig.
Clearly, it's India that has to move towards Pakistan, and Kashmir has to be ceded to Pakistan. And for that, India must receive international guarantees and compensation, most of which would have to be paid by Britain. Without this, neither Pakistan nor Afghanistan will have peace. Our policy does not take enough account of that, although it must be welcomed that Obama has already said that Pakistan needs to be included in any Afghanistan solution. It's a very narrow way of looking at it, which doesn't relate to the whole historic context, and because of that is rejected by the entire Pakistani population, as we now know.
The war goes on. We're increasing the number of troops in Afghanistan, and Obama encouraged Europeans to cooperate more with America. Cooperate meant send more troops to Afghanistan.
As America does more, we will ask others to join us in doing their part. From our partners and NATO allies, we will seek not simply troops, but rather clearly defined capabilities, supporting the Afghan elections, training Afghan security forces, a greater civilian commitment to the Afghan people.
Obama has said he wants more dialogue in NATO. He wants to coordinate more with the allies. A very tight closing of ranks is sought. Good. But what he doesn't want is contradiction. For example, more legalization of NATO deployments. And something else he clearly doesn't want is for the operations running illegally up to now to be downsized in any way. I don't even want to mention concepts like apologizing, compensating, reparations, or things like that. We're now witnessing the last turns of the screw in completely reorganizing NATO into a rapid global intervention force to be focused mainly on what's called COIN, that is, operations against insurgents. Why do we need that? Because we're obviously planning to repress nations.
Die NATO mit der Ausrichtung auf Aufstandsbekämpfung, mit der klaren Ausrichtung, dass weltweit.
By reorganizing NATO to fight insurgencies, the aim is clearly to globally secure our raw material sources. If one puts that into a smaller scale, it's nothing else but organizing a criminal gang. We want to steal, and for that we need firearms.
Wir wollen klauen, und dafür brauchen wir Schießeisen.
Das habe ich auch mal gedacht. Dass wir uns nicht an
I also used to think we wouldn't take part in wars, but sadly, since 1999, that is, since Kosovo, even the Greens, Herr Fischer, agreed to such a war. Even though, as these wars do so often, it started with a lie. You see how important this region is in the EU's eastern expansion, which was then on the agenda, as was NATO's expansion eastward. And right in the middle of all that is this alien element, this semi-socialist Yugoslavia that has resisted all neoliberal policies. For example, Serbia always refused to accept the loan conditions of the International Monetary Fund. These terms are simply privatization, deregulation, downscaling of social security provisions, and budget consolidation. He didn't go along with that for social reasons, so he simply had to be removed. And all that was needed was a pretext. The UCK. The UCK was the perfect one. The advertising institutions of the USA really depicted the Serbs as the evildoers. Milosevic was talked up as the worst villain since Hitler, so that for public consumption one had a justification for going in there. What are the real strategic considerations behind that? Why is something like that done? Why does one wage an internationally illegal war? Internationally illegal because the UN Security Council did not approve it. So it was done without the UN Security Council, a crass breach of international law, a crass breach of the United Nations Charter that we all regard as a great civilizatory advance on what was there before the United Nations.
Gegenüber dem, was vor den Vereinten Nationen war.
That is then always a precedent case in terms of international law. Once you've done something like that, and not enough opposition was put up against it, including publicly, you can invoke it in the next case. And suddenly, a breach of international law becomes something normal in international law, like customary law. The new and old game running is the Near and Middle East. But the next theater to be opened is Africa. Because, of course, Africa is becoming increasingly interesting because of its raw materials and, of course, also because of the oil deposits increasingly being discovered there. For years, Chinese influence has grown greatly in Africa, and the USA has, of course, noticed that and is greatly worried by it. It believes this diminishes its opportunities on the continent. At stake are decisive raw materials and also geostrategic advantages. It's absolutely no coincidence that suddenly pirates turn up here who operate like we're used to it from the so-called terrorists of Al-Qaeda. For wherever Al-Qaeda turns up, in the American understanding, it's legitimate to send troops there, to involve all of NATO, and ultimately to make a war mountain out of a molehill. The only consideration is the strategic position of Somalia in the Horn of Africa. That is a passage for tankers, for example, and that has to be safe, that has to be under American control.
It was written then in the year 2017, China will become the biggest danger for the national security of the United States. They were providing clearly that in a short period of time, China will be a big danger.
Of course, Russia and China also want to exert influence, but we don't see them pursuing these superpower cravings by war.
Durch Krieg auf jeden Fall nicht betreiben. Sie unterstützen, sie bauen.
They support, they build up, they share the profits with the locals if they find oil or mine mineral resources there. And I think that's the smarter way, as well as the more social.
Der sozialere Weg auf jeden Fall auch.
The worst thing from the American point of view is that they depend on one of their greatest rivals, China. China now holds currency reserves of $1.3 trillion, most of it in U.S. government bonds. That means the Chinese are creditors to the U.S. If they weren't, the Americans might have been a lot rougher with China, but they can't be because of this. For the neoconservative think tanks, it's a horror vision to be dependent on any other state and to have to take that into account.
In Abhängigkeit gerät von einem anderen Staat und Rücksicht nehmen muss.
Rules must be binding. Violations must be punished. Words must mean something. North Korea broke the rules, once again, by testing a rocket that could be used for long-range missiles. The world must stand together to prevent the spread of these weapons. Now is the time for a strong international response, and North Korea must know that the path to security and respect will never come through threats and illegal weapons.
Korea ist als Staat nicht denkbar ohne Hilfe aus der Volksrepublik.
North Korea is unthinkable as a state without Chinese support. And the U.S. wants to prevent Korea becoming another nuclear player, like a kind of nuclear hired gun of the People's Republic of China. That means one could let North Korea use nuclear weapons where China does not want to.
Einsetzen lassen, wo man sich als China nicht nuklear engagieren wollte.
All nations must come together to build a stronger global regime. And that's why we must stand shoulder to shoulder to pressure the North Koreans to change course.
The US has the most weapons of this kind and the most dangerous delivery systems and the most precise targeting capabilities. Yet of all the world's powers, it's the US that talks of a world free of nuclear weapons. No one's stopping Mr. Obama from starting at home. But I can only say that given the crisis we have in the Middle East, it would also be very valuable if Israel were prevented from adding to its nuclear arsenal. And what's especially worrying and distressing is this horrible signature by former German Chancellor Gerhard Schröder on the contract to deliver two more nuclear-armed submarines with the latest technology to an absurd Zionist right-radical Israeli government. One can only be horrified by this and by the propensity of the German government to take part in every Israeli crime, not to mention not just standing mutely aside, but, as Chancellor Merkel did, to expressly support the Gaza war. And especially here, I emphasize that every federal government and every federal chancellor before me have been committed to Germany's special historic responsibility for Israel's security. I believe that very fundamentally not forgetting the Holocaust, the recognition that a monstrous crime was perpetrated here, is a very important guideline, especially of German actions. But it can't stop at comparing the numbers killed and arguing that this allows Israel to commit new crimes, and we Germans aren't allowed to speak out against that. That is a kind of accounting that doesn't work out historically, and moreover, is unjust.
Tens of thousands died of hunger, torture, disease, or plain murder, part of the Nazi killing machine that killed 6 million people.
Does some kind of legal tenet force us to remain silent about all new crimes in the Gaza Strip, in Lebanon, or whatever?
Und was immer es sein mag, zu schweigen?
Diese historische Verantwortung Deutschlands ist Teil.
This historic responsibility of Germany is part of my country's national interest. That means to me, as the German Chancellor, that Israel's security is never negotiable.
Es geht ja darum.
The aim is to transfer Palestinian population out of areas where they still live. That is an ancient Zionist dream, cleansing Muslims from this area on religious grounds. That is the Zionist way of thinking.
Dieses Gebiet von Muslimen. Das ist die zionistische Denkweise.
The Palestinian people must preserve Israel's identity as a Jewish state with secure, recognized, defensible borders. And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Es ist ein Konflikt zwischen zwei Weltsichten. Die eine ist eine faschistische.
It's a conflict between two worldviews. One is a fascist national socialist ideology which has incorporated Zionism. That is, Zionism is a racist theory that claims that Jews must have more rights in a certain area called Palestine than non-Jews.
In ein bestimmtes Gebiet, das Palästina heißt, als Nichtjuden.
All Israeli laws are built on that. That means Israel doesn't belong to the people who live there, it belongs to the Jewish nation. And that concept is, of course, in total contradiction to the universal norms of human rights, which oppose discrimination. The Palestinians simply want their freedom to keep and enjoy their human rights. And Israel denies them that because Israel is built on the foundation of Zionism. We call a crime a crime. And the Palestinians in the Near East have been the victims of a crime perpetrated on them for 60 years. And we stay mute about it and put up with mindless propaganda that tries to convince us of the opposite to the facts. I think that morally this is nothing else but the continuation of the injustice of the Nazi period. We're dealing with the same perpetration of injustice here, although naturally we can't compare the horrific crime of the Nazis in the dimension and the execution. Let me not be misunderstood about that. That is beyond comparison. But it must be allowed to name injustice as injustice, no matter who perpetrates it worldwide. And no one must be allowed to perpetrate it anywhere in the world.
We all believe democracy is the right approach within a country. Why isn't democracy right for the whole world? What we have now is plutocracy and militarism. The world is run by those with the greatest military power and the greatest economic power. That is not democratic. That is militaristic. That is plutocracy.
Hamas now controls Gaza. Hezbollah has tightened its grip on southern Lebanon, and it's flexing its muscles in Beirut. Because of the war in Iraq, Iran, which always posed a greater threat to Israel than Iraq, is emboldened and poses the greatest strategic challenge to the United States and Israel in the Middle East in a generation.
If I understood this right, the idea was to encircle Iran and by economic sanctions make it ready to be stormed. If Iran doesn't back down, the German government will continue strong efforts for sanctions. With our NATO presence in Afghanistan, with the American presence in and pressure on Pakistan, with three aircraft carriers here, and with our NATO presence in Iraq, we're encircling Iran. The only thing that didn't work out is the so-called Caspian Sea initiative. Putin resisted that, so our circle has no roof in the north.
Deswegen hat unser Kreis im Norden kein Dach.
So let me be clear. Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile activity poses a real threat, not just to the United States, but to Iran's neighbors and our allies.
The world doesn't have to prove to Iran that Iran is building the atom bomb. Iran has to convince the world that it does not want the atom bomb.
Dass er die Atombombe nicht will.
Dass wir hier keine Atomwaffen haben, stimmt ja.
It's not actually true that we don't have atomic weapons here. American atomic weapons are based here in Büchel, for example, administered by the German armed forces. And the German forces would surely have to fire them too, if the Americans were to think that was the right thing to do in some conflict or other that hopefully will never happen. But we have atomic weapons here in Büchel.
Wir haben in Büchel Atomwaffen.
That is the atomic weapons base in Büchel, located in the southern Eifel Hills area, and there are atomic warheads here. They're guarded in the actual base by the Americans themselves. But this is a base of the German armed forces. In case of war, everything happens in the framework of the so-called German nuclear participation within NATO. So in case of war, these U.S. soldiers hand over the atomic warheads to the German soldiers, who then have to pack them into tornadoes and fly them into the target area as soon as they receive the order. Naturally, you have to start getting rid of atomic weapons right here. That is the call of this demonstration, because I see atomic weapons as one of the most inhuman weapons ever and regard them as fundamentally unsuitable to solving conflicts. Moreover, Germany has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which makes this German nuclear participation here completely internationally illegal. Even soldiers find it intolerable for such barbaric weapons to exist, that they are trained on such weapons, and that they're supposed to follow orders to use such weapons. According to the officially documented legal position of the Defense Ministry, German soldiers are not allowed to use atomic weapons. Orders to do so would be illegal. Under the valid soldiers' law, such orders are not allowed to be given by higher ranks, nor obeyed by lower ranks.
Noch von Untergebenen befolgt werden.
But if that is the legal situation, it begs the question why internationally illegal and German unconstitutional weapons are still stored at this place.
Der Weg, den wir gehen, ist verheerend, weil die Welt interessanterweise...
We're moving down a cataclysmic path, because since the start of the terror war, and before that as well, the military crowing of the USA has made the world ever less secure, rather than more secure. And our spending on the military is increasing at the same time. Unless we can free ourselves from this spiral, this blue globe might be blown to smithereens, because we have enough weapons on it to accomplish that. I ask myself whether the Allied troops looking for weapons of mass destruction here didn't themselves use a weapon of mass destruction by firing uranium ammunition. Deadly dust is about uranium ammunition, the uranium weapons the Allies have been using since 1991 in the Iraq war and in all their wars. That means not just in Iraq in 1991, but also in Kosovo in 1999, before that in Bosnia in 1995, then in 2001 in the Afghanistan war, many GPU-28 and 31 bombs were used, and then again in 2003 in the most recent Iraq war, in the meantime also in Somalia and in Lebanon. So, wherever the Allies are.
Eigentlich überall, wo die Alliierten sind. Depleted uranium, abgereichertes Uran, ist ja eigentlich ein Abfallprodukt.
Depleted uranium is a waste product of the nuclear industry. It's lightly radioactive and, like every heavy metal, highly toxic. And actually, no one knows where to put the stuff.
Weiß man nicht, wohin mit dem Zeug. Es gibt inzwischen weltweit etwa 1.
There are now 1.2 million tons of it, worldwide, increasing by the day. So naturally, it was a huge discovery for the military designers when they found out that if one forms this into a metal rod and accelerates it, it smashes through any obstacle. And the enormous heat created by that friction ignites the depleted uranium, which burns up explosively. That means these shells don't need any explosive of their own.
Und verbrennt explosionsartig. Das heißt, diese Bomben brauchen eigentlich keinen eigenen Sprengstoff.
Hier haben wir nun einen Panzer gefunden.
This tank was destroyed with depleted uranium ammunition, taking hits on the turret here and here on the side.
Am Turm und hier an der Seite. Und wenn wir das messen,
the radioactivity registers far into the red area of this instrument.
Weit im roten Bereich.
Die Euromil.
The European Organization of Military Associations, Euromil, the trade union of European soldiers, condemns this weapon and constantly calls for its abolition. That means Euromil is aware how dangerous it is. NATO knows that too, but ignores the wish of the trade union and keeps using this weapon. I mean to say, there's something wrong here. I didn't really set out to make a film about uranium ammunition. Basically, I wanted to make one about whistleblowers. People, often scientists or doctors, who've discovered something, and despite their contract with a corporation forbidding them to talk about it, were driven by their conscience to go public anyway. On my list, I had Professor Siegwart Horst Günther.
Und auf meiner Liste war eben auch Professor Siegwart Horst Günther.
Als ich dann außerhalb von Basra Kinder...
When I saw children playing outside Basra with such shells, which were painted as dolls, and one of these children then died of leukemia, I got very suspicious. Günther suspected in Iraq in 1991, note the year, that something wasn't right with this ammunition. He feared that it's radioactive and possibly highly toxic. I had a shell found in Iraq taken to Germany in a diplomat's luggage. I finally wanted to know whether the shells, as I suspected, are radioactive. I had it examined at three universities. First at Humboldt University. They said it's highly toxic and radioactive and we want nothing to do with it. Go to the technical university. The technical university behaved exactly the same way. They said we want nothing to do with the stuff. Go to the free university, to the radiological institute. And when I arrived there, they said, it's Friday, we don't want the stuff, come back on Monday. So I had to travel home right across Berlin again with the shell, and on Monday back right across Berlin again with the shell, and there were already 16 police officers there who practically wanted to arrest me because they'd already been informed about the shell's radioactivity. Then a special police squad in protective clothing and with special containers came. They said that is highly toxic and radioactive. Günther was arrested for taking this shell to Germany and was sentenced to pay a 3,000 mark fine for releasing ionizing radiation. What contumely!
In der Begründung hieß es, durch falschen Umgang mit den Geschossen.
The judgment reads that wrong handling of the projectile causes the danger of contamination and incorporation of radioactive material, which can lead to a health hazard. That's why I was sentenced to pay a 3,000 mark penalty. I refused, so I was arrested.
Das habe ich abgelehnt und daraufhin bin ich inhaftiert worden.
I had to spend 5 weeks in prison, but I had gained proof that my assumption that these shells are radioactive is right. That means that in 1992, a German court ascertained how highly dangerous this weapon is. When such a shell hits a tank, the depleted uranium burns up in this great heat into so-called nanoparticles that are 1/100th the size of red blood cells. That means when you inhale them, or when this deadly dust attaches to fruits and grain, you ingest it with food. And inside the body, and that is the horrible thing, it can wander anywhere, into all organs. It goes through the mother-child barrier. After being inhaled, it can move immediately into the brain and settle anywhere there. And the alpha radiator then radiates like the sun onto the neighbor cells. This can fracture chromosomes, that is, people's genetic code can be altered with all the horrendous consequences of deformations. This is a baby we photographed in Baghdad in 2003. A baby the doctor described as having a fish mouth, fish eyes, and a scaly glass-like skin, not able to survive.
Und eine schuppige glasartige Haut hat, also nicht lebensfähig. Und vor zwei Jahren hat ein Kollege.
2 years ago, a colleague took a similar picture in Kabul, even worse actually, but also fish mouth, fish eyes. And I can tell you that in Baghdad and in Basra, I caught a glance of hell. And I think it's constantly going to get worse now in Afghanistan. The baby has all internal organs in a skin sack on its back. Abnormalities so awful, you can hardly imagine them. Ghastly photos, I have to say. And that's now going to come our way sometime. That is, some of the soldiers, our boys included, stationed in Kosovo and Afghanistan, will come home contaminated. Scientists say 30% to 40% of them. And when they sire children with their girlfriends and wives, this hideous experience is going to be ours.
Nach aller wissenschaftlichen Erkenntnis.
Former German Defense Minister Rudolf Scharping. According to all scientific findings and all medical experience, the radiation risk is negligible, especially to deployed soldiers. You could actually be very outraged about a defense minister saying something like that. But in principle, unfortunately, one has to protect the man, because there are scientists who will allow themselves to be corrupted. And he had commissioned the Institute for Radiation Protection, whose scientists were under orders from the defense ministry, which said clearly in a letter to them that it was assumed that the radiation has no negative effect on the soldiers nor on the environment.
eben nicht negativ auf die Soldaten und auf die Umwelt wirkt.
Wir müssten ja uns klar.
These weapons have existed for more than 40 years. So for more than 40 years we've known that they breach all four international criteria usually applied to banning weapons of war, because their effect cannot be limited, because they inevitably affect civilians, and so on. Yet we haven't campaigned for abolition of this type of weapon. So if the German government responds to a parliamentary question by the Left Party by saying uranium weapons do not breach international law, then that is so because we have prevented their abolition.
Es ist nach allen gültigen Sachen, die wir uns geschaffen hat, Genf.
According to all the valid things we have created for ourselves, the Geneva and Hague conventions, our grandfathers worked so hard to get onto paper, and which were signed by all the states, such a weapon is actually absolutely banned and its use branded as a war crime.
Wir haben noch eine große
Strecke. We still have a long way to go to outlawing these weapons, and of course compensation to the peoples impacted. I count the Palestinians, the Near East, the Balkans, Iraq, and especially Afghanistan.
Der Irak und eben insbesondere Afghanistan angeht. Da gibt es eine Menge aufzuarbeiten.
There's a lot to catch up with there, and I deplore greatly that most Afghan hospitals refuse to allow genetic material to be examined, or tissue material to be taken from people killed, or children deformed so badly that they cannot survive, or even from living ones.
Lebensfähig sind wegen zu schwerer Schädigungen, auch solchen, die leben. Und diese dann an glaubwürdige Labors.
These could then be sent to trustworthy laboratories, which could prove the effects of uranium weapons. We're being denied that proof up to now. That is self-evidently also internationally illegal and breaches the Hippocratic Oath to ethically practice medicine. Doctors who refuse to cooperate on this should be made to take down their shingle and should clearly be banned from practicing.
Unless we prosecute those crimes, then we are guilty of covering them up, and we cannot claim to be a country based on law. These are international crimes. These are war crimes. So they must be prosecuted.
Im Herbst 2008.
In the autumn of 2008, the United Nations had a vote on whether this weapon should be banned. 144 states voted to ban it, but only four voted against and thereby achieved a veto. Those four were the USA, Britain, France and Israel.
Im Frühjahr 2008 hat
In the spring of 2008, the press agency in Iraq, which actually operates by permission from the Allies, reported that in Iraq alone 18 regions can no longer be lived in. These are around Baghdad, around Nasiriya and around Basra, where dreadful tank battles took place in 1991 and 2003. That means it's now recognized that such regions are actually uninhabitable and that people living there have to be resettled somewhere else. But that's too late, of course. They've been breathing this stuff in for years, and because of that they will fall ill with cancer, with leukemia and die. And I fear that it's planned like that, that the aim really is to systematically destroy a population, to decimate them.
Das heißt, die Menschen tragen Genschäden.
People's genes will be damaged and they'll no longer be able to bear healthy children. So that what we're doing there is very clearly genocide, a creeping genocide.
Die Bombardierung in Afghanistan von Tora Bora.
The giant Tora Bora system of caves in Afghanistan was bombed because Osama bin Laden was assumed to be there. But it's also one of Afghanistan's biggest water source areas. So the bombing systematically made the spring water unusable. It has been poisoned by the high toxicity of these bombs and it's radioactive.
Und es ist radioaktiv. Ich habe das Gefühl, das ist
I'm feeling that this is the most important issue I have dug up in my career, and we have to bring it to public attention. I don't want to be told someday, you knew about it but did nothing.
Du hast was gewusst und hast nichts getan.
Wir sind immer mehr bereit zu akzeptieren.
We're more and more ready to accept that war is a necessity. War is becoming part of political considerations because we don't know what war is like. Because we live in our world where we have our internet, our television, our nice warm homes and our fast food, and we have no idea what the deprivation of war is like. And that's why we're so quick to judge. That's a crazy madman and we have to remove him by force of arms. We don't see how that makes the population of the country suffer. And that destinies depend on this. We have no feeling, no empathy for what's happening there. I think it's necessary to call back into people's awareness that wars are the most fascist, inhuman thing known to the world, and that no war must be allowed to be the solution of any kind of political conflict. Every single one of us, be they filmmaker or musician like us, or every single blogger, hopes for changes. They're not going to happen from one day to the next. It's the process that matters. It's slowly activating. Would you please tell us your experiences with the media? Sure. We posted this song about the 11th of September on the internet and at that point didn't know any more than we'd seen in Loose Change. I found that so important and so comprehensible to me personally that I thought you have to package that in a song to present to a broad public.
A
3-minute rap song like the one we made can tell you short and snappy what matters. Basically, everyone can do something with the abilities they have to spread this information far and wide. Our mainstream media ruthlessly fail to do that. I think it's unbelievable how we, who are trying to show reality in our amateurish way, are always compared with the media. No one ever asks for a source if a television newsreader rattles off something. Already in March 2002, I put something on 9/11 together with an East German colleague that we named Merkwürdigkeiten, peculiarities. We didn't consider that a conspiracy theory. It was strange, unusual peculiarities we had collected on 22 pages. When I read through it, I said to myself, if you were to take this to a television journalist who's well disposed towards you, even he'll say, Wagner's lost his marbles now. He's actually suggesting there's something suspicious about the way things are said to have happened. I'm fed up to the back teeth with media that lie to me all day. And the question is, do we want to start a different medium that doesn't do that? I think it's much more important to set up an entertainment broadcaster, to air entertainment and films that don't present the classic image of the state protecting you, and James Bond is there for you, but the exact opposite, but with high entertainment value as well. That would rip to shreds people's perception of the world. If they previously felt the state protects me, they suddenly see that it's the exact opposite. The state is trying to scare me. And many people find it hard to believe that. So there's huge resistance when they're told that a very big proportion of the terror attacks are perpetrated by our own side. They're organized by our own secret services so that we can take part in the world game of occupying oil sources and strategically important areas so that we can be in it. We say we're also being threatened. We must finally break free of the notion that it's up to us to prove what really happened. It isn't. We just have to say, that's what they say, and this is what we've found, and the two don't match. And everyone can use their voice, their email, their letter, their complaint or their blog to see to it that things that are running wrong are depicted correctly. And more people are doing that. It's penetrating people's awareness. And so we're optimistic that the truth will ultimately prevail. And I think even more people will be at the demo in Brussels tomorrow to demand a new European investigation of the events on the 11th of September. A lot more people than last year. We also want to get involved. We want to help get people moving, get people rising up and taking to the streets to show we're not going to play along with this.
Every human being on earth doesn't want war. Every human being on earth needs water and needs food, and everybody just wants peace and wants to live hand in hand with each other. And there are only a very few people who are really not wanting this. So thank you very much for coming. Keep the revolution alive and talk to the people who are just standing next to you.
9/11 was just once again, they did cross once again the line. But they did it in Vietnam, they did it even before on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They did cross the line a lot of time. And so I think the activist work is a daily work. A victory will be a true democracy, a real democracy, not a participative or representative democracy. A true democracy where the people are really involved in, yes, this could be a nice victory.
But it will require a revolution. Don't make no mistake about it. We will have to revolt. I'm sorry to say so. But it will be a revolution without a leader. It's really important to break free and be the god in your own life, be the leader of your own life, be the president, be the first prime minister. Do what you feel. If you really feel this world is going at the wrong side, make it better and start with yourself.
911. Now we have all these professional organizations. We have Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which includes hundreds of scientists, including physicists and chemists. We have Pilots for 9/11 Truth, Veterans for 9/11 Truth, with many former military officers, Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, medical professionals for 9/11 Truth, religious leaders for 9/11 Truth, lawyers for 9/11 Truth, political leaders for 9/11 Truth, intelligence officers for 9/11 Truth.
Every one of us has to do everything in our power to raise the awareness of these truths so that people realize how manipulated they've actually become.
More and more people realize that we've been lied to, that the whole 9/11 thing is a scam, the war on terror is a scam. You know, you realize that people begin to wake up. It's good. It's good.
There was a time when everyone said the Earth is a disc, and now everyone knows it's a globe. And one day, everyone will know that 9/11 was engineered such to have a pretext for war, to take us into a global totalitarian state if we don't do anything against it. So how do we go from here? What do we do with this situation as the German nation, as Europe, as NATO? How do we deal with governments who would rather send troops against the population than give up their criminal policies?
And so I don't want her to be victim of that.
Wir müssen die Medien wieder dazu bewegen, darüber zu berichten.
We have to get the media back into reporting about it. They have to do what they're there for, research and publish. And if necessary, we'll have to form another extra-parliamentary opposition and take to the streets again to pressure them to do it. An opposition that has to articulate its views on the streets if it can't get a hearing any other way. We have to take to the streets again.
Auf der Straße verdeutlicht werden müssen. Wir müssen wieder auf die Straße.
I worked in that field for a very long time, in the criminal police. And there you develop a way of recognizing things that make sense and things that don't make sense. If this is what I suspect it is, then it's the crime of the century. And I don't want to keep living with that, and humanity can't keep living with that either. Something really terrible will happen to us if we allow this lie to stand. The world could be perceived altogether differently, not just as an exercise ground for savage corporations and their compliant military, but as an area where peaceful interests could flourish so richly that we wouldn't need such things. But I admit you can make money faster as the manager of such enterprises and governments, certainly in a bad way.
Auf die schlechte Weise. Unser alter Bundespräsident Johannes Rau hat einmal
gesagt, our former federal president Johannes Rau once said, democracies are not viable if ethics no longer matter in the day-to-day business of politics. Especially as the mightiest armed alliance of the world, we should stop wanting to oppress foreign nations. That would be the best contribution to our security that I can imagine.